You want to give us a count around, Joel? Not a reach around, a count around.
I don't do reach arounds. 3, 2, 1.
Only for a Dell dog.
Who's the best show here?
Back show!
Who's the best show here?
Back show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza. Pizza, pizza.
I use the bathroom.
Showtime! Well, you were making it too young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine chair show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the gas, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies, that'll make it bad. For the show, then go direct to DLNGS.org. And IRC channels and Linux.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 933 of the Linuxling Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
Hey, how's it going?
We have Joel.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
Hey, hey. I kind of want to continue that conversation we were having a second ago.
Tablet.
What conversation was that?
Oh,
we're talking about tablets.
If we were picking a brand new tablet, what would my suggestions be, especially if, you know, I wanted it to run Linux? And looking at the tablets that are out there right now, I would have to say my choices would be the Dell Latitude 7320, the i7 edition, which, wow. $2,200 for a tablet, but it's got an i7-1180G7 in it, and that's nice. 16
Wait,
gigs
that's
of RAM.
My laptop.
You can get it. Oh, if you get it with the 512, it's $2,329.
And they have a detachable variant too.
Oh, it is a detach. Well, it just comes apart from the keyboard.
Do they all?
Keyboard.
No, they actually have combos of those. If you look, there's a detachable option and a regular option, which is basically just your fold over the keyboard thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm not seeing it on this list here where you could get the different keyboards, and this is from Dell's website. So were you looking at the 7220, the Rugged Extreme tablet?
Nope, I just put the link in the Mumble chat.
Okay, that one looks like it folds back laptop or 2-in-1, so you can pick either one. But I'd love it if it came with a hard keyboard.
Are all the 7320s detachable?
It looks like all of them. 7320, no, it looks like one flips back.
Okay. Because I was just looking at them over there on Amazon. I should have gone to Dell's laps.
Beasts, too.
Whew.
Yeah. Then my second choice, and this is a tough call on this one, would be the Lenovo ThinkPad X12. And I don't know how well it would run Linux, but it comes with the i5, the 1140 G7. And 8 gigabytes and 512 gigabytes, so it's less memory, but it's got that ThinkPad keyboard.
Yep.
And detachable, of course. Yeah.
Looks like nothing like my keyboard cover I have from my Surface, so it looks a little bit different than that. I'd also wait. You probably could go with the Surface. If you wanted that hardware, I'm not sure how well it would work with Linux. The pen may not work either.
It does. It you can get it to work. The problem is custom kernels and then keeping up with the custom kernels. And if it's the brand new one, then, you know, when is the custom kernel going to be available for it?
Probably in a year.
Yeah. And I just can't recommend it because of all the extra work that has to go into it.
Right. Yeah, and I can imagine that. You know, plus the, you know, the big reason to get a Surface is the pen, if you throw in for that. And that, I've tried it on my Surface Pro. It works essentially as a mouse, which is kind of useless, really. Because you got your finger, that works as a mouse too. But, you know, I'd rather just use a mouse.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I looked it up on the Lenovo website, and they do have an i7 version.
There you go. Yeah.
And that's kind of awesome. i7, 1160 G7.
Okay, and probably the only problems I see with those...
And 16 gig.
Right. The only problems I see with those are really the same problems that the Surface Pros have, is they don't have discrete graphics, so...
Right, right. Well, it is a tablet, but
right.
It's got, what, Iris graphics?
Yeah,
Intel Iris. Graphics.
Yeah. And for most things, it's enough, but...
If you're getting a tablet, then you're not exactly getting it to run AAA games.
No.
And the price on the ThinkPad X12 detachable with an i7 and 16 gigs of RAM is, they've got two versions here. I don't know what the difference is between the two. One of them is $1,179 and one of them is $1,339. And one of them's a 1 terabyte and one of them's a 512 gig hard drive. And what, $150 for an extra 512 gig, which not terrible.
And these are something too that you'd want to make sure that you get the amount of RAM you think you need, cause you ain't upgrading it later.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not the RAM, but, that's one of the nice things about the Latitude line of detachables and tablets, is you have access to be able to replace, like, the Wi-Fi card and the, and the hard drive. You can actually go in there and remove the hard drive and put in another one.
Yeah. Or like, my regular laptop, my Asus, I think it's G15603, or I forget the actual model number, but that one actually has, you know, you can put memory in it, you can put a second M2 drive in it. And I know it actually has, I did see it actually had a, cables and stuff in the teardown I saw, so you might be able to swap the Wi-Fi card. I don't know why you'd want to, because it's got the Intel Killer card in it.
with my 5290, the Dell Latitude 5290, I only have the i5 version, but it still runs really nice, and 8 gigabytes of RAM. Mm-hmm. But it has the Wi-Fi slot, and then it has a WAN slot. For like cellular service, but the WAN slot was unpopulated, so I got, I think it was a 2230, either a 2230 or a 2242.
WAN card?
No, SSD.
Oh, okay.
So it has two SSDs now.
There you go.
That works out really well.
I need to think about
that. Space is appreciated.
Yeah, I need to think about adding the second M2 to this, because I am starting to not play in a lot of games, and nothing really ultra modern or new games. Like I played Portal 2 last night. It did fine with that, but then that would do fine on anything I have now. And I did fire up MechWarrior Online for a very little bit. I haven't gone all the way through the tutorial, but I might, when I get on vacation, I might play a little bit of that just to see how it works on here. But I really haven't had any problems with this thing other than weirdness. Like tonight, I wanted to use it on the show tonight just because I wanted to test something out. NVIDIA has something called NVIDIA Broadcast that works on, right now it's Windows only, but I think they are working on an SDK for Linux. But basically it allows you to apply AI to noise filtering, like could literally be sitting downstairs, my son playing the Wii, and you wouldn't hear it. Or you wouldn't hear the echo because of the walls downstairs. So it generally works okay with Mumble. What I did find out is I basically had to make the program the default sound card before Mumble would accept it. If I went into Mumble and said, hey, I want to use this NVIDIA broadcast, it just basically hung and didn't work. And then the only way I can get NVIDIA broadcast back was if I rebooted the laptop. So something in Mumble causes that to not work too well. But once I basically selected the default device in Mumble on both and set the default to be NVIDIA audio, it seems to be working good. So and it uses the RTX features in the this has what a 3050 RTX in it. So it uses that to help cut the noise down.
Yeah, but new kernel 5.13. I guess that's not the newest. I guess you can get up to like 5.15 or 5.16 or something like that. But in Linux Mint, it bricks my NVIDIA drivers. So I had to roll back to 5.11.
Are you using NVIDIA's or?
Yeah.
Okay,
but it's an
so
older
you're not using
setup.
Open source.
It's an older setup, so I might be able to do a full reinstall. Because if you remember a couple of years back, I had a lot of trouble setting up those NVIDIA drivers, and then I finally got them working.
Yeah.
And followed the upgrade path since, and this is the first time I've had a problem.
Yep.
But I've done very little to that machine because I want it to stay working. Just because of how difficult it was.
Yep.
So
understandable.
When it finally forces me to go to 5.1, I'll see if there's any way to fix it. Otherwise, I'll force it onto older ones because I forced it onto 5.
Yep. The one thing I do have on the Windows laptop is I do have a Windows subsystem for Linux, and it really works well as much as I've used it. I really haven't used it a lot, but like a good example is in the File Explorer in Windows 11. It actually has a Linux folder, and then you can go into that and you can see your Ubuntu install in the WSL. And then you can copy stuff in and out of that directory, and that way it's there when you start up a Windows subsystem for Linux. And of the things I've tried in it, I'm very impressed. There's no need for you to install an Xserve on Windows, so you can run X applications just fine. I ran a GIMP. I would say not everything works that way, but GIMP does, and a few others. So I'll have to play around with that a little bit more, mostly because really the big things I want to start to mess with a little bit is maybe Ansible. I don't know how well that would work under, mostly because really what I probably should do is set up a true VirtualBox environment to screw around with it. Because Ansible is one of our automation things, as is Jenkins and Git. We use Git also for the code on that. So, but beyond that, for our company, we use a product called CloudEndor for DR recovery. And of course, this is going to segue right into the AWS outage of yesterday, which we were affected. The good thing none of our clients were directly affected. It was mostly our tools. That goes to show you where, if you're deploying DR tools on AWS, you do not want to just put your resources for DR in one availability zone. You should be putting them in multiple, and failing that, you should also consider using more than one cloud service provider. Right now we're only using AWS, so, but it goes back towards my biggest nitpick with the cloud, and I think Dan can probably confirm with that, is that there's not real standards for, like, for example, if you wanted to use AWS as your primary and your AZ goes down, it's not easy to just move over to Azure or Google or anything else. Mostly because the standards are a little bit different than each provider.
That's the price of doing business in the cloud, baby.
Well, pretty much. I mean, now, I'm not saying you can't move from one provider to the next, but it's a major project to do it. It's, you're not DRing that in your normal time frame. So it might be worth putting, like if you use something like Cloud Endor and it happens to be supported on one of the other providers, it's not AWS, it might be good to put that there and all your other DR tools and things like Git and stuff on a different cloud provider. And then at least that way, your tools won't go down, trying to support your clients. So that's the only thing I can think of. But beyond that, and the occasional blip with like Slack and, really, I'd say it's Slack. Zoom was never a problem with us. So we had Zooms all day yesterday and today and no problems with, the AWS outage. I don't know how much you were affected, Dan. Probably not at all.
Well, but, given that we are pretty much all in on Google, we were still affected. What was interesting is we started getting alerts for one of our applications not working. A feed processor, so it runs on a cron job, and every 5 minutes, it pulls down feeds from various video sources, and pulls them into our system, our content management system for use.
Oh, but you were using YouTube.
Well, no. What ended up happening was we started getting these alerts because one of the alerts that we have is if a success message doesn't appear at least once in a 15-minute period, then it sends an alert that there might be a problem. And all of the feeds, we have six of them, six separate video feed applications were alerting, and come to find out, they weren't having a problem at all. It was we use Sumo Logic for aggregating logs, and they were having, I guess, some kind of issue, or our controller for Sumo Logic was in AWS and it wasn't getting the logs. So the alert was going off because there was no information flowing in. But if I went over to Google Logger, I could see all the logs over there. It's just, we haven't completely moved out of all of some of our services in favor of the Google logging and monitoring ecosystem yet. And that was one of the ones that was still over there. So that was impacted by AWS, which kind of affected us, but it was a false alarm. And the application was working fine. It was just they were on AWS and not able to get the information as they needed it.
How you can be impacted even though your stuff's not hosted there.
Right. And of course, you know, just anybody else that was impacted, if it's a third party service that you use, you will be impacted. Or could be. And I know apparently a bunch of esports gamers weren't able to do their shows on that day, according to PC Gamer magazine.
Was Twitch down too?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't read the article. I just saw the headline. And I'm like, well, yeah, AWS had an outage, of course. But, Joel, I got an email.
Oh.
What's today's date? The 8th. I got an email yesterday. It was a notification of a job available from customer service at Virginia Employment Commission. And it was all, I don't know why I got it, but, it had to do with when I had to file for unemployment, when we had the furloughs at work. And so I guess sometimes I still get emails about job, and it's, I found a job opportunity on our website that may be of interest to you based on your skills and background. Can you guess what the job is?
Desktop support.
A mid-level ServiceNow developer at Booz Allen Hamilton Incorporated.
Hell no.
I'm like, absolutely not. I would not even entertain that. ServiceNow developer? Nope. Absolutely not. So I thought you might get a kick out of that.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, I'll get them every once in a while from LinkedIn. Like, you know, we have this great, great job that your background might fit.
Well,
and it pays half of what I get paid now. Like, so how is that going to do me any good? Or like Grizzly or some other startup or something. And they're like, I'll pay you $70,000 a year. Yeah, no, I'm beyond that.
Well, you know, the opportunity is always there. And like Joe says,
yeah, if I'm desperate, maybe, but.
No. Pay me enough and I'll do it.
Yeah, that too, but. And that ain't enough for me, you know.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I get a lot of job offers and then, you know, they call me up and tell me what they're willing to pay me and it's no. And then, yep. Why don't you want this job? What's wrong with this job?
Well, uh-huh.
It's basically doing the exact same thing I'm doing now, but.
Or more, depending on where you're going, where you're talking about. Like, I had, probably can talk about this now, but I had an interview down at Ohio Christian University. And for an admin position, it didn't even come close to paying what I made at Columbus State, which is a lot less than I get paid now. So it's like, you know, and, I guarantee you that not even their CIO gets paid what I get paid now. So it's like, I'd love to go work there, but you know, you gotta pay for it. And at least that's kind of the reaction I also got by just interviewing with the team. It's like they're basically trying to figure out how to script and get by and, on a limited budget, you know, which, hey, I'm familiar with that, but you know, that's not going to include my wallet. So,
yeah, that's kind of the point that I was going with there, that they want to pay me half as much or a little over half as much and expect me to want to just jump on the job. And it's like, really?
Yeah, no. Or they'll ask for something stupid like 20 years experience in something that just came out 5 years ago. And it's like, yeah, no.
I've seen that before too. Or they'll call it an entry level position where you're required to have a minimum of 5 years experience doing that exact job.
Entry level, right? Yeah, no. So, but.
Requesting 10 years experience running Kubernetes clusters, right?
Yeah, there you go. You know, that's what, 5 years old now, probably?
Entry-level position requesting 10 years experience of the Kubernetes cluster. speaking of Kubernetes, I ran into an interesting problem yesterday in that in our WordPress VIP environment, the way that they handle secrets. Now we use Vault for our secret storage and can our applications can access the vault to get those secrets. Or I should say the Kubernetes containers have the permissions to access the vault through there and get the applications can get the secrets. But because VIP is a third party, they do not have there's no connectivity because our vault's internal, not external. And so there's no way to do that. And the way that VIP used to handle secrets and stuff like that is you would send them the secrets and they would put it in the database that they have. And then it would be accessible to your WordPress instance that you were running as an environmental variable. Well, yeah, it was an environmental variable. And they kind of changed it in that now using, if you've ever used WordPress, there's something called WordPress CLI. It's a command line for interacting with WordPress and the database. You could do stuff. Well, they have VIP CLI, which interacts with WordPress VIP and the database. And they opened it up recently. And so instead of you sending them that information and they put it in the database, you can do it yourself. And that makes it a whole lot easier. And the way it used to operate in the past is how they did that is it would be made available as a constant inside of VIP to WordPress. But now it's they make it available as an environmental variable and in a way that you can use either their automatic class or they have another function that's called VIP get environment variable that makes it available there. So I had taken a ticket to overwork, you know, rework how we were handling secrets and to make use of this change in technology. And I was running into a little bit of a problem with what I was trying to do and not have to, I was trying to get it in a way I can do it centralized because the issue that we have is the way that you access it in VIP is different than how you get it in local development. So long story short, I was trying to find a single unified way that we might be able to handle this and not have to kind of have this trade-off between how we do it in local development and how we do it in WordPress VIP. And I came upon, like, the way that we do local development is there's a it's called VVV. It's a Vagrant technology. And so it's varying vagrants is what VVV stands for. And, they have a way to do this.
Does it stand for very, very verbose?
Yeah, it should. It should. And it's a little bit of a curve to get it set up. There's a lot of moving parts on there. And then when you run it, it spins up everything you need. The database, all this stuff, gets created in Vagrant. There's a little bit of configuration, a little bit of stuff that you have to put in certain specific places. And it's not too hard, but it requires a little bit of hands-on configuration, obviously. And it runs good. But I came upon, this thing that they didn't have when we first set this up, but it was called VIP local development. And using the VIP CLI, they made it possible to spin up a local development environment. And all you need to do is you need to pass it your repository, like where you have checked out the repository. All right. You just tell it where you've checked out the repository, where your code base is, and it could go from there. Now, the other thing that you could do is, so WordPress under the WP content, there's plugins. And so there's two different directories. There's MU plugins, and then there's client MU plugins for VIP. And what MU plugins are like general WordPress plugins, and then the VIP plugins go there. And then client MU plugins is where you put your own plugins in that you are designing and creating. They go in there. So the MU plugins is something that's up there in VIP, and then they make that same plugin stuff available that you can download, check out a repository of that plugin information. So you could either do that yourself, check out that MU plugins, and have that like your regular. So VVV, Varying Vagrant Vagrants, requires that you have the WordPress base checked out, and then under WordPress base, under WP Contents, you have your client MU repository checked out, and then you have the your under WP Content is your repository, and then under that is also where you have the client MU checked out. But in the VIP local dev thing, you could just specify, you know, pull it down automatically. It uses Docker. You have to have Docker, and it just pulls down the containers. And so you just pass it those two things of information, and you can tell it that you can set up just a generic sandbox testing environment, or you could have it set up like one of your environments in VIP where it's develop. We have develop, stage, or production, and three things that you pass to it, and lo and behold, you're up and running in a few minutes. Now, the first time you do this, it has to pull down the virtual, the images, the Docker container images. So it's getting you, your database, everything, sets it up. And the way that it ties it all together is it makes use of, I think it's called, Lando? L-A-N-D-O. And that does all the connectivity between the different containers and acts as your bridge and sets up the networking automatically. And this thing works beautifully and is so damn simple. And I was like, we should switch to using this, except for one problem. We have it integrated with Okta, which I've spoken about in the past through one, the one SAML plugin. And the problem that we end up having is we had to set up on the Okta side the URL that it returns to. So when you go and authenticate in Okta, it goes off to Okta and then it comes back and to the, it sends to the domain that you have specified. And our local domain for testing is called gannett.test, which was originally set up. Now that's a value that is on the Okta side and can't be changed. When Lando sets up, it has a completely different domain. And therefore, if you try to log in using the Okta stuff, it goes off the Okta and comes back to gannett.test, and it's not available because it's not running at gannett.test. It's running under this Lando domain, which, because they simplified all this setup, there's no way to change that value that I could find. So I thought maybe I could just create a network alias in Docker that would duplicate this, because it doesn't alter the host file and do it that way. It's this Lando does it through the Kubernetes networking, so it handles it that way. And unfortunately, for the life of me, I could not figure out how to make this happen to do it. So apparently, like, I thought I could just add a host alias or an alias to an existing network, but it would not allow me to do that. I had to, you know, the best I could do was create a new network while it was running, but when I did that, it wasn't connected properly, and it wouldn't allow me to kind of use that new host name alias, network alias, to get to where I needed to go. If it would have allowed me to do it, it would work perfectly. And everything I was reading was basically saying, if you're, there's no way to change the network aliases on a running Kubernetes system. You could add a new one, but I couldn't get it to do what I wanted it to do, which was completely unfortunate. But it was still a pretty cool technology. But I just met with a lot of resistance, and man, it was a hard as hell trying to find information on doing that. And whether that was allowed to be done, cause you can go to the Docker network, config documentation, and it says you could set up a network alias like this, but it only works, if, when you're setting it up and before you have the containers running. If the containers are running, you can add to it, but you can't, you'd have to create a completely different network in order for it to be able to be added to what you're, what's running. You can't alter or add to something that's already running and set up, which is where I was running into the problem. And that's where I, that's about as far as I got with it, and I, all my testing and all my research indicated that it's not something you can do. And if somebody knows of a way to do it, you know, I would love to hear about it. Please send me the information. But that was unfortunate, mm-hmm. Joel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm.
Documentation always kills you. Let's be honest. What person in IT really wants to write documentation? None that I know of.
I write documentation all the time, but it's in our...
So do I.
In Confluence and for our right. Stuff.
Yeah, that's like, I had a Confluence, like, we had a DR test scheduled for the day of the AWS thing, and we had to postpone it to today, and we're going to try and do it again tomorrow. Basically, we're just trying to get all our ducks in a row before we go before the auditors on Friday and do the same thing again. So, various things, happened this time, but the biggest one was the fact that, I added like, I don't say between 1 and it might have been 3 o'clock. Yeah, it was after 3 o'clock, I think. So I added data to the system we were going to DR right around 3 o'clock, and the test is scheduled to start around 4 o'clock. And we did successfully move from one AZ to another, from US East to US West in Amazon, and that worked fine, but the data that I added was missing. So basically what's probably going to happen is tomorrow I think I'll confirm with the team when I get on in the morning, but I want to make sure that we have the system fall back to US East, and then I'm just going to immediately go in and put the data in there, because they have like the cloud endorsed set, like basically if we fall over from US East, you know, say US East had a problem and we fall over to, from US East to US West. When we do that, when we're up on US West, we'll only have the data from 2 hours ago. So what had happened was I did it before not enough time had occurred between when I added the data and when they, go ahead to fall over to US West. So while it was successful, there were issues. The data that I put in the system isn't there. So, and that's not necessarily a failure, because I think our RPO is like 2 hours. So if this is a real client situation, that's the best we could do. But in our case, you know, we're going to make sure that, data that I put in tomorrow in US East makes it to US West. And that proves that everything works. So at that point, so, but otherwise it was pretty interesting exercise. I did not do anything with the Cloud Endorphs tools or anything like that. That's not my area. My area is the application itself. So I had to validate the application, make sure the application come up normal. And I already know that, going into next year, especially with this recent AWS issue, DR is going to be foremost on our team's mind because we need to, beef up how we do all of it. So, which, you know, I want to say here now is if you think you have a good plan and you don't test it, you don't have a good plan.
Yeah, testing is always important.
It's very important. So, and
you can have all the backups in the world, but if you can't restore, then it's kind of useless.
Or if all your tools are in US East and US East has an issue. So, I mean, that's, you know, don't put all your eggs in one availability zone. Just like don't put it all, like don't run prod and non-prod on the same server or the same VPC. You know, well, you can run the same VPC, but don't, I'm not in the same instance, but yeah. But don't do that with your tools too. Make sure you have tools, like if you at least spam both AZs in two different regions, and that's probably going to be sufficient, but I think right now, I think what's probably going to happen in the near future is you're going to see, companies start to rely on more than one provider. Just in case one provider has an issue, they'll be okay on the other provider. And hopefully the big tech companies that are responsible for the cloud, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon, will have tools built such that that'll make your job easier, but I'm not counting on it. You know, that AWS thing even affected Amazon themselves, and specifically a lot of their deliveries. Like if you were expecting to get a delivery Tuesday, you probably didn't get it. It probably got delayed today.
Well, it happens. How long did the outage last? That
really
wasn't
a good question.
It wasn't paying too much attention to it because it wasn't real. Like I said, it didn't really impact us.
Let's see. Increased API error rates started at 12:34 p.m. Pacific time that day, and generally, looks like most of it was over by 4:35 Pacific that day, but there were probably some services were still being recovered at that point. But most of it was up because it is all because of I think a network device had some issues. This time it wasn't actual, like I think the last one I had was I think human, generated. I don't think this one was.
Well, that's what you get.
Mm-hmm.
At least you could point the finger at somebody else and not have, if you run it in your own data centers.
Right.
Then.
Now, I don't think it would impact, well, one of the stories I was looking at actually had a picture of one of those McDonald's kiosk things, the ordering kiosks, and all the pictures were gone. And they're theorizing that McDonald's had all the pictures stored for that in S3 buckets. Which, I don't know, you never heard of caching? Anyway. But, news from, story from Bleeping Computer, the AWS outage impacts Ring. There's one you don't really want it to impact is your security cameras, if you have a Ring camera. Netflix and Amazon deliveries.
No, that would suck.
Yep. Yeah, and Roku, Amazon Prime itself. Yep. But I had an interesting experience with IKEA. We had ordered via the web a shelf for my wife to put in her little space downstairs just before Thanksgiving. All right. It didn't deliver the day they said, and I figured, oh, it's okay. It'll deliver on Monday, and it didn't deliver then. So, you know, we've gotten almost 2 weeks, nothing, you know, no phone call, no email other than the one email that says make sure your shipping information is correct, which it was. So I call IKEA. They give me the tracking number of the company that they use for the shipping, which is Select Express, and or Select EXP, I believe is how they spell it. I call them. They say, oh, we'll try tomorrow. I'm like, okay. I call them, and that didn't happen, so I called again. And he said, oh, he said your address is wrong. I'm like, no, our address is right, because, see, keep in mind that we're not listening to Google Maps. This is the map monoculture, as I like to call it, because everybody freaking uses Google Maps for delivery. So they said, oh, okay. We'll send it out on Monday. All right. Monday or Saturday, it said. I'm like, okay. So Saturday comes, you know, the time frame comes to go. I was pissed. I just called them up and said, cancel my fucking order. I was a little nicer than that, but I was pissed. So, and they did refund the money. But it's like, does everybody fucking use only Google Maps now? I mean, it's ridiculous. If your company is only using Google Maps, you're failing. I mean, that's not the only map source out there. So, and I don't know if that's what company uses, Dan, but, or if you even have a need for mapping in your applications, but I'd seriously look at using not just Google Maps, but try adding Waze or OpenStreetMap or somebody else as well.
Yeah, what I do, we don't have to use maps.
And that's a good thing. At one point, actually, here's the funny thing. When we brought out version 4 of our application, the UI that employees use, they use Yahoo Maps for the mapping service, which is just hilarious.
Yahoo Maps, damn.
I know, right? And they use it for, they finally just disabled mapping altogether. They did it just for having a rough time finding one that would work all the time. And didn't want an arm and a leg, to use the API. I guess they also figured it was just as easy to copy and paste the address into Google, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah, our Google Maps, it's usually pretty good. We don't have a problem, but my house is like shows up on the map, yep, as being a block down the street, actually. If you were to follow it, the Google Maps to my, like, I see, you can see my house on Google Maps, but if you follow it with the directions, it never seems to line up with our house, but whatever. We haven't had an issue yet. Haven't had an issue yet.
Now, I have another thing. OLF's come and gone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Talk about OLF.
So, I didn't go in person this year because I didn't want to pay for something that I wasn't sure if I can actually go to or not, even though I'm in the same city and all that. So, what I ended up doing is I paid for the online. And other Linux Fest, take note, this is kind of the wrong way to do online. Instead of, and I don't know how they did this, especially if they have multiple, I don't know if they have multiple tracks going or not. I didn't honestly look at the schedule. But if you look on their YouTube channel, which is where they were streaming it, they have 2 10-hour streams. Yeah, I don't have 10 hours to sit there and look at the whole damn thing.
Well, so they didn't split it up? It was just a constant?
Nope.
Even now that it's available? Oh, okay. Yeah, they're probably going to split it up.
I hope so, but... the only one that is separate is there was a presentation on Alma Linux that was pre-recorded because the presenters couldn't be there. So, and I've never heard of Alma Linux, A-L-M-A Linux. So, it's based on CentOS. So, that one's separate too, but that's the only, like if you look in their YouTube channel, that's the only 3 videos they posted this year. Other than ones they posted from 10 months ago. So my guess is that they will end up splitting them out because I'm sure not going to sit there and watch a 10-hour stream. In fact, I'm kind of surprised that they were able to stream for 10 hours. I mean, I guess I could fire it up on the app and then kick the speed up. Which you can do in a YouTube app, but. And of the pictures I saw, it definitely didn't look like it was as well attended, and it's kind of to be expected. With the pandemic still kind of going on a little bit here and there. But we'll see what happens next year. For me, the presentations weren't always a big focus of a Linux Fest. It's more of getting to talk to the guys like Dan and Joe and Pat and Alan and Murph and occasionally Claudio.
You don't want to talk to that Joe guy. He's an asshole.
Yeah, he is. That's why we stay out of that side of the country going to the Linux Fest.
Right.
I think Texas Linux Fest is going to be, or supposed to be in like Austin next year.
I was going to say, I would expect Austin to probably be one of those ones that are going to be on the, still real concerned with it.
It'll depend.
Yeah.
You never know. Everybody might get vaccinated and realize that they should be wearing masks. You never know. It could happen.
So back to the shelf for a little bit. So now my wife's like, well, I still want a shelf. And I'm like, okay, let's go look on Amazon. I found one here. So when can it be delivered? I said Saturday or Sunday. And she's like, well, I want it before then. And I'm like, you're not going to get it shipped before then. You know, if we had this conversation like on the weekend, like I wanted to have when she was cranky, had it ordered, but, and she said, well, you got all the stuff for your office, and I'm like, yeah, that's because I wasn't picky.
So wait, did you get it at IKEA?
What we'll probably end up doing is we'll probably, order it to pick up there.
Okay.
And pick it up ourselves, which, fortunately for me, the new vehicle has a very good cam system, so I'm a little bit more comfortable in the new car picking it up, but I absolutely hate going to IKEA to pick anything up, because Their brainiac idea was to put the pickup area right in front of the store. Right? Oh, and problem with that is you're combating with everybody coming in the store, both people walking as well as driving. And like three times while I'm trying to back into the spot, the last time I picked something up there, I had either a person walk out or a car try to drive between me and the curb. I'm like, really? You don't see my reverse lights.
They got places to be. They got stuff to pick up, man. Come on.
I guess, but.
You haven't tried driving in Dallas recently, have you?
I did back in 2017 and it was a nightmare then, so.
Yeah, it still is a nightmare.
I could probably say I've never driven in Dallas.
That's why I'd rather have things delivered.
That's why I said proudly say.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what's worse than Dallas. L.A. 10 times worse than that. Well, it takes me 45 minutes to go from one exit to another just to go get dinner. I think the next time I went over to that area, I figured out surface streets way to get, and I got there quicker.
But how do you know that Dallas doesn't have the traffic on both the highway and the surface streets like that? So it still takes you 45 minutes. Maybe it doesn't.
You know what? They're just as stupid on the surface streets as they are on the highway.
In Dallas?
Even stupider, yeah.
There you go.
It's bad.
Yep. Well, that goes kind of goes to one of my beefs. Really, my only beef on the car is, you know, I got this brand new car, has at least 4 cameras on it, okay? One in the front, one on each side, and one in the back, okay? But can I use those as a kind of a dash cam for a collision? Nope. I went again through the manual, couldn't find anything on that. It's got an SD card that the NAV system uses that I don't need to use because I use Android Auto.
Well, you could pay a little extra for that, right?
That's a good question. I have not figured out just yet.
So you're saying that you want it constantly recording to like the SD card and then like overwriting itself after a period of time?
The way a lot of them work is
cache the images and then a collision happens, it writes the cache to a disk.
Right. The one I tested was that when I was still writing for Gear Diary that I had to send back. It did have motion devices, kind of like your phone has, and it would just loop over the recording on there. It would keep like a certain amount, like it would keep like, I don't know, 2 hours worth, I think, or something like that. But then once you hit like the 2 hour mark, it would delete the one from 2 hours ago and keep recording. If you got into a collision and the camera detected it, then it would automatically save the one that was working on right then and there. All right. There's still a potential you could miss it. Like, for example, say if it was in the middle of going from one clip to the next when it happened, then you could potentially miss the event. But that happens so quickly that it would be a really, you know, it may have to be real
lucky.
Yeah, lucky for that to fail. So
wait, hold on a second. You say you have a camera on all the sides of your vehicle?
Yep.
So why does it have a camera on the front?
Basically, it'll composite all of those cameras when you're going, and you can only really look at them when you're going 5 miles an hour or slower. So like in a parking lot situation, like what I'll do is say I'm pulling into a spot at the grocery store or something. I hit the home button on the infotainment system, then hit the camera button. It takes all 4 of those cameras and creates an aerial view kind of. By just compositing all those images together. And then you literally can see you know, your car's in the middle, and it'll show you whether you're in the lines.
I figured it was so extremely short people could still see where they were going.
Well, it could be that too.
Max, I was going to say, can't you just look out the front window while you're like, what's the point of the front one?
Well, the front one, will also show you, like, for a good example here is if you're pulling into that spot and you want, and for example, say
basically,
there's one of those.
You get a better view of the bumper.
Well, yeah.
Relative position of the bumper to whatever's in front of you.
And that curb thing. You know, like, a lot of parking lots will have those curbs that are held in with rebar, you know, those things. And you don't want to put your car, you don't want to run your car over that. It's going to scratch the hell out of the dam on the car, you know, or whatever thing you have under that.
How did I survive all this up till now without having a camera?
By learning how long your vehicle is and guesstimating.
Yes.
This takes the guesstimation away.
This absolutely does. And it increases safety too. So
I get it.
Like, and there's the other nice thing about the camera too is
it's either that or so you can get a really good close up of the dead body as you're running over it again.
Yeah. But you can also hit like a side view that will show like both the front that just shows the tires so you can tell where your tires are. You can also get a view more focused on the back of the vehicle so that you can see as you're, like, say you're trying to hook up to a trailer, which is kind of useless for mine because it has a hitch, but I can only tow 1,500 pounds or under because I only have two-wheel drive. But it's nice to have that because you can see that a good view behind you. So then, especially the rear camera. Say you have that cargo area loaded up to the point where your back window's covered.
Bad idea, but whatever.
Well, yeah, I agree. Yeah. But it's not a big deal in my car now because I can, on the mirror, the thing that you will normally flip, like, because somebody's shining their high beams in your back window.
Right.
If you flip that, then my rear view mirror becomes a screen. And it shows you the view of the back camera. So the only thing missing from it is the seats and stuff from the interior. And the kind of nice thing too.
So what if someone's shining their high beams into your camera? Then that's what you see.
It filters it down. Yeah. So it does. It actually does a really good job. In fact, I almost prefer driving at night with it on, even if I don't need it, because for whatever reason, in just plain mirror mode, it's always dimmer than I think it should be. It's like it always has the night feature function on all the time. You know, I have to fiddle around with it and see if I can figure out a way to make the mirror part brighter. Cause sometimes the screen on the rear view mirror is a little distracting, just because you don't see everything you expect to see that you normally see in a rear view mirror, like the seats and stuff, you know. But,
you know, I have to say,
at night driving with it on all the time.
the rear camera for, you know, a hitch sounds like a great idea. That would have saved my dad a lot of time and cursing.
And back bumpers.
You never had that problem, but I know sometimes I look back and I'm like amazed at how eventually got good enough to direct him to actually hook up to the camper. There were a lot of times when anger and frustration and yep.
Or, you know, like my dad, we had a, when I was little, at one point my dad, I'm trying to think when we finally got rid of it. It might have been when we moved to Athens, but, we would go camping and dad had a trailer. He had, I don't know where he got it from, but I do remember him making wood panels that would slide into some, I forget what you call them, but basically there's these rectangular holes on either side of the bed of this trailer. So it would raise the top of that trailer up and he would load like our tent and stuff in that because at that time he was driving, I think we had that primarily when he had a 72 Heavy Chevy. Yes, he had the Heavy Chevy version of the Chevelle. And that thing could pass anything but a gas station. back in the 70s, you know. And then he replaced that before we left the Western Pennsylvania area. He ended up replacing that with a 78 Monte Carlo. And I don't think he ever towed the trailer with that. But he did with that.
I thought you were going to tell me he made some kind of contraption that allowed him to hook the hitch up with that. Yeah.
No, my dad wouldn't have done that.
I'm like, how did that work?
My dad wouldn't have done that, but my grandpa would have. My grandpa, one of the things he did, he had a, we used to go stay the summer with him, with grandma, just to give mom and dad a break. So, he had a roof rack for his, he had a, the one I remember the most was a 1980 Skylark he had. All right, so you got one of them roof racks to go on either the rain gutters, you know, on all the cars back then had those rain gutters right above each window, you know, and so you got those the roof racks, but it was just the two crossbars. So what he had ended up doing is he took those crossbars and he went and I found like a sandbox from like a home improvement store or something like that. And he screwed those rails right into the bottom of that. And both my bike and my brother's bike would fit in that. And then he'd throw a tarp over that. And that's how he got our bikes, to his house when we'd stay with him over the summer. You know, I don't even know if they made bike racks for cars back then, but that's how we got our bikes to grandpa's house.
It was a sandbox?
Yeah. Either he bought a sandbox or he made one of the two. I can't remember because it was.
Were
you
the
know,
bikes strapped down in
ago.
It then, or did he?
Yeah,
just,
yeah, bungee cords.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, bungee. He would put the bikes in the box. They would take bungee cords from either side, like cross them over, like so. He'd on the crossbar that was closest to the driver's door, he'd hook the bungee cord on that and then go all the way to the right rear and connect it there, and the same thing on the other side, so form an X over the box. And then over that, he would put a tarp, and then he put more bungee cords over that. My grandpa loved bungee cords.
Was it actual box? Was it shaped like
it was a box.
All right, okay. Yeah. It wasn't a circle, and it wasn't an oval.
No,
right?
it was a rectangle.
That's pretty, that's pretty cool. That's
yeah.
Bravo. Well, I mean, it worked, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, it was like probably before Thule was a thing. Thule is a company that makes boxes to put on your
right.
roof, like for various things. Like a lot of people will put skis and crap in those, or they'll just put stuff that they don't want to have in their car.
I have one. It's not a hard one.
Right.
It's a soft one.
Yeah,
and it works really good.
Yeah, those. Yeah, like yeah, I've seen those too. Now that's the one thing. My new car has a roof rack, but it does have the crossbars. But I can buy the crossbars. They're like $140, I think. I don't know if I'm ever gonna buy them or not because I can count the amount of times I used the roof rack on my 2017 on one hand. The only time I ever remember using it is right before we, sold the house and we were doing all the floors in the house. And, we went to Lowe's to go get, the trim. I get the trim and I discover, oh, that shit ain't fitting inside. All right. I mean, I could have had
roof rack at least once a year.
Yeah. I probably could have cut it so that it would fit in the back. Even with the seats folded down, I couldn't fit it in there. And then again, I couldn't fit all of what I could fit in there. It was in weird and kind of made it not convenient for the person sitting in the passenger side, like my wife. So we ended up tying it to the roof of that. And that was fun. I was sitting here. I had to kind of navigate from the Lowe's I was at. To home without using the freeway, cause those pieces of trim would have snapped just like that in the drag from going 65 miles an hour on I-270. We got it home. That's the only time I remember using it. So, but I did want to buy one of those, Yeah, the cloth bag that's waterproof on the outside. Like, it has like a blanket like material that goes down on top of the car, right? So it doesn't scratch it. But I've seen those. I almost bought one.
Yeah, our Kia has a roof rack, but the Fit didn't, and I had a removable roof rack.
Yeah, there you go.
Before we got the Kia, and that worked out pretty well. That's where we first used the Thule soft bag thing up there,
right?
And that worked out. Yeah, we use that a bunch of times. We still use the soft bag, but not on.
Yeah, well, I would say what I might get for my Traverse is they do have bike racks that go right on the hitch, so I can get that for taking our bikes with us, or I can get instead of that get a. A lot of them will have, like, you can also get, like, a wire mesh basket that will go right into that receiver and put that on your car. Then you can put things that can get wet, because if you put it back there, it will get wet. so you wouldn't want to put, like, your clothes on that thing. But, like, if you had, like if I was camping, I could probably strap, like, I have a chest that I use when I car camp, it has like all my pots and pans and stuff like that in it. That could go on there. But honestly though, I don't even know if I would do that. the Traverse has more than enough storage inside when you fold the seats down. And I can fold either one side down or the other, and I can fold them all the way up to the front row if I have to. But it's pretty easy for me to gain a little bit of extra space by just folding the third row down, and I have usually plenty. So, but I did buy, if you buy a car and you know you want to get things like those stretchy nets that you can get, mine has hooks on the very back right by the tailgate. And they have a cargo net that you can get from the dealer that costs a lot of money that basically makes it like a little envelope, so you can put like your groceries and stuff that would normally roll around the back of your car in that to prevent them from doing that. Well, I went on Amazon and I got one for like $17, and it works every bit as well as the one you can get from the dealer. So if you need that kind of stuff for securing your cargo in your car, check Amazon first, because it's really easy to find stuff that'll fit your car by just putting your Amazon actually has a like a garage, so you literally can store the car that you drive the most in there, and then when you can search for things, you can just tell it, well, I'm driving this, and then it'll find things that'll only fit your car. So, that's one thing, car-wise. The other thing, the one thing I miss from the cars from, like, the 70s and 80s is they used to have that little trash can that would go right on the hump. Do you ever have a car with one of those in it, Dan?
Trash can on the what?
The hump, the transmission hump that was in back when you had a rear-wheel drive car.
Well, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At least one of my cars had like a wire thingy, and it came with a trash can that slides right on that. But I started looking for like a trash can or bag to go in the car, so that when I'm driving, like if I drink a pop, stick a can in there instead of just throw it on the floor. But everyone I found, like, either hangs off the back seat, which doesn't really make it convenient if you're solo driving like I do occasionally, or is designed to sit on the floor, and then that takes up your feet space. So I haven't quite figured out that yet, except for just maybe throwing a grocery bag that doesn't have holes in it, and use that as a trash bag and put it in there, but still, yeah. That bag laying on your floor. Cause I'm trying to keep this thing look nice. I'm not saying I didn't do that with my old car. I did, but I was a little bit more lenient because my old car, instead of coming with the carpeted floor mats, like my new one has, it had rubber ones all over the place. So those ones were easy. Like if a little, drivel came out of your can onto the mat, you can just yank the mat out and spray it down at the car wash or at home with your hose, and no harm, no foul, you know, would go away. But this one, it's got carpeted floor mats. So, and in the front, I haven't even taken the, when they ship cars to you, they have like this plastic stuff that covers those mats. I haven't even taken that off in the front yet. I don't know, first world problems, but. But I don't want to trade this one in I don't want a new car as soon as I ended up getting one. You know, I want to keep this one at least through the loan period. But.
Well, I got some news for everybody. I know they're excitedly waiting. We have this. Let me play this. Coming up very soon.
Hey, folks. It's that time of year again. Time for the Hacker Public Radio 24 Hours New Year's Eve show. We encourage everyone to join us for stimulating conversation and maybe send a Happy New Year's greeting to the HPR community. We plan on starting at 10 a.m. UTC December 31st, also known as 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will keep the recording going until 12 a.m. UTC January 1st, also known as 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, unless people are still on and talking. To join us, all you have to do is install Mumble. It is available on all platforms, including iOS and Android. Then, just create a nick and go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details. Connect, join the Hacker Public Radio room, and you're there. If you can't join us in Mumble, but would like to hear the show live, we will have a stream up so you can listen. You can go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details of the stream. So come on and join us. It's always a good time.
Yeah.
There you go. Hacker Public Radio.
I don't know if I'm going to go and be on it, but
I'll probably be on.
There you go.
At least for part of it. I'm not staying there the whole 30-something hours.
Oh, heck no. Haven't recorded a show for HPR in a long time.
Yeah, neither have I. Should. I keep thinking. I started to. I had a couple of shows, and I need to go back and refine them. I don't know what the hell I'm waiting for.
I don't either. But one thing I do know, I've got, for my other show, the Living in the Shade of an 80s Arcade. Sorry for being an M4A. I will say for the first time, I've actually made a tiny bit of money. On that podcast, for like $14. Haven't cashed out yet. Probably won't. But, on that show, I've kind of been struggling a little bit. So I think one of the things days I'm going to try and get Link on to talk about, you know, video games and stuff like that in the 80s. But I do know one important thing that's going to happen next year is that the Atari Video Computer System, otherwise known as the Atari 2600, is 50 years old next year. So, my plan is I'm going to try and, I have to look and see when that day, the day falls, but I might have a special, episode out that day, especially if it's not on a Saturday. I'll probably just record a special one for that. I talked about it a little bit last show, I just talked about probably the biggest thing that they have available now, is you can go to their website and buy a t-shirt for that, Atari 50th anniversary t-shirt. And then of course then they have the new Atari VCS based on the AMD Ryzen chip. I think it's, $400, I think.
Yeah, I've seen that. I don't think I would buy that.
Well, for me, it all depends. Is it going to cost a lot of extra to play the, like the classic 2600 games on it, like combat and stuff like that?
The ones that you can download off ROM sites and play.
Yeah, right.
I will just say about anything.
Right. But I will say that the reinvented joystick really looks cool. And they also, it also ships probably the first, well, not the first system to ship with a gamepad for Atari. Because technically, the 7800 actually had a gamepad. But only in Europe. And Jaguar had one. But the new VCS has one as well. But the new joystick looks pretty fantastic. I'm wondering how I'm wondering if they made it better than the original, which that's not hard. Well, we snapped those rings off inside the old school '70s and '80s ones. But then the one thing I loved about that time is the '80s. You had Commodore, as well as Atari's computers, and a lot of other companies use that same port for the joysticks or gamepads. Like the Sega Genesis used the exact same port. In fact, you can actually take a Genesis gamepad and plug it into a 2600, and it will work. So if you're looking for a joystick and you can't find one of the originals for your old 7800 or 2600, try that Genesis gamepad.
Dun dun dun. Genesis.
But yeah, it just makes me feel old that Atari is 50 years old.
Was that Sega does with Nintendo?
Well, it's not that you feel old.
It's that I am old.
Are old.
Right. And actually, the 50th anniversary is, I don't think that's actually that's not from the VCS. I think it's just the birth of Atari, like when they brought Pong and stuff like that out. Still. But other things too of interesting note for Atari is that there are the recharged versions of the game that you can download, different games that you can download onto your phone, like Missile Command Recharged, Centipede Recharged. So modern takes on the old school video games. So if you want to play a little bit of those things, they are different. I've played the Missile Command one. It's pretty good. There's also Centipede Recharged as well. Some of those are also available on Steam. Or will be, like Centipede's not available. Actually, wait a minute. Atari plays games with you. Soon available, but then when you scroll down, it says the release date is September 29th. I'm assuming that's this.
I don't know. Looking at Missile Command Recharged, it's like the same damn game, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's got some new twists.
Yeah. I mean, do they have Asteroids Recharged?
You know, that would be cool.
Yeah, they do. There we go.
Yeah. Centipede doesn't seem to be in Steam yet.
Well. Guess we gotta get this show wrapped up in a minute.
Yep, it's almost 10 o'clock.
Is that time again?
Yes, sir.
Joel's turning into a dill dog and gonna have pumpkin spice.
I actually got cinnamon latte creamer in the fridge right now for my coffee.
Oh. Is it a fake cinnamon flavor?
It tastes real to me, but actually, the Centipede is available. For some reason, I couldn't find it in the Steam app when I searched for it, which is weird. But the Centipede one is
$16.98.
$16.98? See, oh wait, it says for a bundle. So that's with both Centipede recharged and one I've never heard of, Black Widow recharged. Might be better off going over to Humble Bundle too on some of that.
You know what I've been seeing? I didn't know that was, okay. I didn't realize it. I saw that on, I've seen that on the Nintendo shop and on the PlayStation store. I didn't put two and two together that was one of these Atari games that was just remade or updated.
You can probably get the original one too on the Switch easily.
Wonder what the original looked like. It looks almost like the recharged one.
Yeah, recharged. Well, I think they were aiming at nostalgia more than they were trying to reinvent the game.
Yeah, I guess so. You know what? Why not a Tempest recharged?
Yeah.
Oh, or man, Paper I put in Boy. Tempest recharge and I get pictures of dildos. What the
Seriously?
Hell? I guess the closest you're going to get is Tempest 4000 from Xbox One.
Maybe.
Yeah, well. All right. Play promos.
Yep.
So.
And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, we will. For TLLTS Recharged. $16.99.
And then the week after that, I will probably be in Tennessee with my dad.
Well, wait a second. Which week are you talking about?
The week of Christmas.
The week before
Christmas. Yeah, the 22nd.
Okay. All right.
So if we do a show, which I think we will.
Yeah, I think I should be here. It's the 22nd. I should be here. I won't be here the following week though. The week between Christmas and New Year's, I will be at my mother-in-law's. Anyway, all right. Well, we'll decide that on next week. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Here we go. We're going to play your promos. You're going to hear that HBR promo again. Joel and is Pat still on? I don't think he is. Usually,
I don't think he was on at all today.
He was. He was here.
Well, yeah, that's right. On. I did hear him a little bit.
Yeah. So, all right. We'll see you, everybody, in a week. Have a happy. Here are your promos.
I am short.
Mm-hmm. Hey, folks. It's that time of year again. Time for the Hacker Public Radio 24 Hours New Year's Eve show. We encourage everyone to join us for stimulating conversation and maybe send a Happy New Year's greeting to the HBR community. We plan on starting at 10 a.m. UTC, December 31st, also known as 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will keep the recording going until 12 a.m. UTC, January 1st, also known as 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, unless people are still on and talking. To join us, all you have to do is install Mumble. It is available on all platforms, including iOS and Android. Then, just create a nick and go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details. Connect, join the room, and you're there. If you can't join us in Mumble, but would like to hear the show live, we will have a stream up so you can listen. You can go to hackerpublicradio.org for the server details of the stream. So come on and join us. It's always a good time.
Oh my God. It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community.
If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah. Chet, if you're still on there, check that Humble Bundle page I just sent in there. In the mumble chat, they have two sets of 3D printable desktop tabletop gaming things. Basically, you pay for it and you download all the STLs. Mm. But I'm not sure how they would come out on our FDM printer. Probably better for an SLA printer.
They look cool. Yeah, probably yep. For an SLA printer.
At least
the ports would be difficult on an FDM.
Yeah, at least the figures, like some of the props might be okay on FDM, but I'm not impressed with their game collection on the bundles right now.
Why, what's on the collection?
Not very many. See, they got Best of Sandbox, which has a whole bunch of things in it that I've never heard of before. Does have the Batman collection.
What is that, the Arkham Knights collection or something like that?
Well, it has Batman Arkham VR.
Okay.
Batman Arkham Origins.
Okay.
And Lego Batman and more. It has 8 games total. And 2 of them are Lego Batman games. The Lego Batman, Lego Batman 2. But does have Batman Arkham Asylum Game of the Year Edition. Arkham Origins and Arkham Knight Premium Edition. Plus the Arkham VR. Yeah, Arkham City. GOTY Edition. Oh, and Batman 3. Lego Batman 3. Beyond Gotham. If you like the Lego Batman games, I don't like the Lego, any of the Lego games. I bought I forget what system, we had one of the Star Wars ones, probably on the Xbox 360. And I just didn't like that you never really died.
Yeah.
So it's a great game for kids, but not for me so much.
You just blow up in a pile of Legos and you come
pile
back
of
together.
Lego, right? Yeah. And then it would put you back together and you're right back where you started.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense if you're, you know, a Lego.
Or 5. Now, I did play, like I said, I played a little Portal 2, and that seemed to work pretty well on this, but it should. It's an old game. I should get, like, the next time the Star Wars ones come out, like they had TIE Fighter and a bunch of others, I should look at getting those next time they come out.
I'll see you guys next.
It's supposed to apply AI to filter out noise.
Okay.
We shall see.
Wow.
Sounds like you got a cold.
No, I don't have a cold. I just all of a sudden got some congested
nose. Old man snots. There you go.
Yeah.
Let's see, I got this week, and then next week, and then I'm on vacation. Not the rest of the year, but just for the holiday. The main holiday. Because I don't give a rat's ass about New Year's. It's just another year. Isn't it amazing how you get rid of the, you just don't care about New Year's as much?
I have this week and next week also, but I have off on Monday, and then I'm off. Last day is Friday for the rest of the year.
There you go.
Yeah. Do-do-do. The excitement never ends for the HPR yep. New Year's Eve show.
And OLF. I kind of didn't like the way they did the online thing. Basically 10-hour videos.
Basically what? You know what? I completely forgot about it. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about it on the show.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's about time to start. Let's see. We finish something up here. Looks like Joe is here.
Is Joe here?
Well, he's not yet. He's in the audio test. I can see him right now.
Oh. And amazingly enough, I actually didn't run this through the audio test. Sounds fine.
Hello.
And now he is here.
Here we are.
What's going on?
Not much. Just looking at eBay to see what tablets look good. Not that I need another tablet. I'm just, you know, pricing stuff.
Yeah.
People keep asking me, what tablet would I buy?
None of them, you say.
None of them, really.
Well, no. If I were in the market for a tablet right now, it'd be another Dell Latitude, either a 5285 or a 5290.
There's a what good if they price. Want a new tablet, not a used tablet?
Okay. Dell Latitude might have a new tablet. I don't know.
For Android, I'm going to say none. Well, yes, okay, I'll qualify that. If you want to have one, it's going to get at least some updates, and you don't really care about how it performs, go with the Fire tablet.
Yeah. If you want one with a truly excellent screen, then you get the top-end Samsung tablet, whatever that is right now.
Or that, right, yeah. only ones I'm seeing on Dell's website are convertibles.
I don't know.
Alright, this is 9:33. We should start the show. We've got so much excitement tonight. So much excitement.
The cloud fails for a little while.
Does it matter if I do this? Do you still hear me? Do you hear me?
I hear you.
No, I can't hear you at all.
Oh, good. I wonder
why. Latitude 7320 detachable.
Wonder why that just stopped working on my mic. Who knows? All right.
What's your mute button?
Yeah, it just stopped working. It stopped working a couple years ago, I think. But the mic still works, and that's all that matters. So there we are, and here we go.